Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, we've got Craig, Don and Frank with us to reflect on Arsenal's 1-1 draw against Leicester and Chelsea's 3-2 victory against Crystal Palace. Also, Casey Keller, Hercules Gomez, Sebastian Salazar and Alejandro Moreno looking ahead to the start. It's tomorrow now. The start of the MLS is Back tournament, but we've got to start in Italy. What a day! What a crazy match between Juventus and Milan. Milan winning by 4-2, but you take a look at the table, Juventus still remain, of course, hot favourites to win the title, especially after Lazio lost today by 2-1 against Lecce. But Gab Marcotti, this was nuts, this Juve game. 2-0 up, great goal from Rabiot. We saw Ronaldo get on the score sheet. I'm sure many Milan fans went, yeah, you know, that's enough, Phil. And then 6 goals in 3 minutes, then the late strike from Rebic, seeing AC Milan winning by 4-2.
It's football. This is what happens. The incredible happens. I mean, this is kind of like Milan's version of Istanbul. Sort of here before once with Juventus, they played Fiorentina. I think it was back in 2013, and a young Giuseppe Rossi, of course, scoring a hat-trick. But that's ancient history. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about tonight, because Juve weren't just 2-0 up. They were 2-0 up and playing, I thought, really, really well for the best part of an hour. And then they paid a price for Milan's persistence, Milan's quality, and also, I think, some pretty obvious defensive mistakes at the back.
Right. I've got to ask you about the penalty, Gab, because that was really the big changer. That gave them a little bit of a lifeline. Handball on Bonucci, that's really harsh, isn't it?
No, it's not really harsh at all. I mean, those penalties have been given all season long in Serie A. He has his elbow out. He pushes it away from his body. He moves it towards the ball. He gains an advantage. There's no issue there. That is not in question, Dan.
Okay, all right then. What is in question is Juventus and their mentality and their defense. How did they crumble so quickly?
Well, I think you have to give credit to Milan again for being persistent. But what you saw was some really, really poor defending. I know that Rugani is going to go and become the scapegoat. Of course, he was playing because Matthijs de Ligt is suspended. But goodness me, it goes beyond him. I thought Leo Bonucci had a poor game. You saw at the end, Alexandro, that wayward pass, which ended up in the Rebic goal. We saw Danilo struggle. So I think it's a whole combination of things. They just weren't able to keep the ball effectively in midfield and just basically keep Milan away from their back line. Milan simply, they pressed higher up the pitch and Juve's defense simply folded.
And what's crazy from a Milan's point of view is that they're up to fifth in the table. Great run after the break, yet we know that Pioli is going. It's kind of very strange that this has all happened in this sequence, in that they're going to bring in Rangnick, but really, you've got to say he's got a large shoes to fill now.
Look, people going big on the fact that Rangnick is coming in. My understanding is that actually the deal isn't quite yet official. But Stefano Pioli was the interim coach. People seem to forget this. What Milan don't want to do is jump from one manager to the other. And so that's why they signed Pioli through to the end of the season after Giampaolo was sacked. It does seem odd. For me personally, if you want the Rangnick effect, you could have him as a technical director, director of football type role, and get Pioli to execute. Pioli is a plug-and-play manager. He knows every system. He will do. He can play in every system. All you got to do is sell him on it. But for whatever reason, Rangnick seems adamant that he wants to be coach and general manager. And if the deal is done, like I said, my understanding is that this deal is not yet 100% signed, sealed, and delivered. Then he's going to get his way, and he's going to come in to coach with wide ranging powers over recruitment and other aspects as well.
This obviously a hard game for Juventus fans to watch, hard for Lazio fans as well, considering they saw their team earlier in the day lose 2-1 to Lecce. You know, if they'd won that game, then they would still be in touching distance. We could still be talking about a title race.
Yeah, and look, you could go back, obviously, to the game at the weekend as well. Yeah. You know, those are points that they drop along the way. I think the reality is, apart from that spell against Atalanta where they were 2-0 up and then of course ended up losing 3-2, Lazio really haven't played well. They haven't clicked, even with Caicedo and Immobile back for this match. Their nerves were all a tizzy. Simone Inzaghi saying afterwards, well, you know, we simply don't have the squad if we have to play twice a week. It's too much pressure on us. All that's fine and good. And look, maybe he's right. But, you know, the reality is this is a different team than the one that we saw before the lockdown.
But it's Patrick who's grabbing all the headlines for all the wrong reasons for the bite late on.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't even, in an age of VAR, to think that, I mean, apart from the fact that it's disgusting and it's horrific, and you know, we skewered Luis Suarez, who briefly overlapped with Patrick at Barcelona, by the way. Patrick was with the Barcelona B team at the time. You're not going to get away with it. You're not going to get away with it. And he didn't, and rightly so. And I hope he gets a long ban.
We spent a lot of the break, Gab, talking about the future of Lautaro Martinez and about him moving to Barcelona and about the buyout clause, a buyout clause that has now expired.
The buyout clause has expired, and what it means is that he can't force a move or force a move for $111 million. Look, in the end, in practical terms, you know, if he comes out and says, look, I want to go, and if Barcelona put together an offer, and it would need to be a players plus cash offer, because, of course, funds are limited at Barcelona right now, then it's not going to happen. And that's also why, you know, there's talk of Inter offering him a new deal, doubling his wages. But I think the reality is the market is open until October 5th. And if Barcelona managed to shift a player, they manage to raise some cash, I wouldn't be surprised if they take another run at him, new contract or no new contract.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. More from Gab and his new Fancy Dan haircut, along with Jules on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast that you can download over on the website. Action in Italy then continues tomorrow, 6 games in total. Atalanta with a chance to move up to third in the table. They play host to Sampdoria, that game live on ESPN Plus at 3:45. Of course, Inter will be keeping a close eye on that tie. They're away against Hellas Verona on Thursday. That's also on ESPN Plus at 3:45.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Chelsea moving up to third in the table with a 3-2 victory away against Crystal Palace. Meanwhile, Leicester dropped to fourth after a 1-1 draw against Arsenal. Well, let's start, shall we, with that game as we welcome in Don, Frank and Craig. Craig, thoroughly entertaining match. Arsenal had their chances in the first half. Leicester rallying in the end for the draw.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal looked good for 45 minutes. That being said, Leicester did have the odd chance or two. But I think one of the things that's happened with Arsenal is, you know, obviously players getting fit in game time. Kieran Tierney been one who was a big signing for them down that left-hand side. I think Guendouzi giving it big licks at Brighton the other week's actually done Arteta a favour, because he's just been able to biff him off and get Ceballos in there alongside Xhaka. And of course, Lacazette and Aubameyang in the side, with Aubameyang on the left and young Saka's form. So for 45 minutes, it was pretty good. But, you know, we got a response from Leicester, and, you know, it's a 90-minute-plus game, and Arsenal couldn't quite see it out. But it was a decent performance from both sides.
Of course, a big moment in the game. Nketiah coming on, and before even touching the ball, he would get sent off. VAR intervening, the referee going to the monitor. Frank, for you, was it a red card?
Yes, because it's even if he doesn't touch the player, it's a day, and he did touch the player, it's definitely a very dangerous movement that he did. Of course, he tried to get the ball, but he missed the ball and got almost the knee of the player, so he could have broken his knee. So it's definitely a red card, and for me, a straight one. But he had to see the VAR, the ref, but that was an obvious decision for me.
Number of your colleagues on Twitter, Don, saying no red card. It was harsh, no intent.
No, I mean, listen, there was no intent, but it was a dangerous tackle because when you come on as a substitute, you're trying to win the ball, and he was trying to make an impression, and he was slightly late. He was very high. I'm surprised VAR looked at it that many times. The referee went straight across to the monitor, only had to see it once and done the right thing. It was a clear red card.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. And as much as we applaud finally the referee going into the monitor, Craig, it took 10 hours for VAR to tell him to do it. He's just gone straight away.
Well, it'd take you longer than 10 hours to give a roll call of all Don's colleagues these days, you know, yeah, such yeah, as
exactly. His global... Me and Frank have been here for 15 minutes ready to go and you've rocked up late.
I did. Well, to be fair, I got down the stairs as quick as I could. I totally agree, Dan. Look, it's almost taken, 90% of the season for the referees in the Premier League anyway, Chris Kavanagh, kudos, to go to the monitor. The decision was made by the match official, which is what most of us have been calling out for months and months and months. VAR is there to aid and abet the referee, but the decision should be made by him. And the fact he looked at, I think, two replays in about 5 seconds and made a decision, I think, is the key point. But you're absolutely right. Why he wasn't told to go over there after a couple of replays is baffling. You could clearly see there was no malice from young Nketiah, but it was reckless, it was dangerous, it was high, it was late. It ticked all the boxes to say to Chris Kavanagh, look, Chris, after 20, 30 seconds, get yourself over to the monitor. Yeah. So I think that's the way forward, but it's taken him way too long to do it. Unfortunately for the young man, but how anybody can look at it and say, oh, no, that's not a red card because he didn't mean it. Listen, none of us in the main mean to foul players when we're going for a ball, but most of us do. Just because you didn't mean it is not in the laws of the game.
And, of course, the Vardy goal was reviewed as well. Question marks as to whether or not Perez had touched it on the way through to the striker. It wasn't clear. It seemed to be the right decision, Frank.
Yeah, it seems to me, yeah, because we never see Vardy offside, and I'm not sure. Well, I think Perez touched the ball, but even when Perez touches the ball, I don't think Vardy is offside. So for me, it's a good decision from the referees, and it's a goal, and it's a fair draw for that game.
I think that's the key point there, Dan. I see a lot of people were missing, and Frank just touched on it. Is that everybody was looking at, did Perez touch the ball or not? And I understand that. But I totally agree with Frank. The first thing that I thought about, once Perez touches the ball, Vardy, I think, is level or behind the ball. So thus, he would be onside. So I think they've looked at that. And even if the touch was minute from Perez, there's a fair chance that Vardy, at that point, was in an onside position.
I don't think I've ever heard you use the word thus before. Don, looking at this overall, though, Leicester get the point, but they do 4-4, and Manchester United in action tomorrow. Wolves as well, breathing down their neck.
Yeah, worrying time since the restart for Brendan Rodgers. They've not been in good form. And listen, they might not got anything from the game unless Arsenal went down to 10 men. So I think, all said and done, he'll take a point, he'll try and take some sort of momentum, a little bit of confidence, because when they did have 11v10, they actually knocked the ball around really, really slickly, and their passing was quite precise. And he's got to move on, and he's got to have a strong finish to the season, because you're right, all the teams in and around them are all picking up wins and looking really strong.
Let's move on then to Crystal Palace against Chelsea. 3-2. Chelsea looked like they were cruising at some stage. In the end, though, it was pretty much the width of a post that saved them. It looked like Palace had got a late equaliser in this one, Craig. For the neutral, it was great to watch.
Well, not for half an hour it wasn't, or thereabouts, because it was one-way traffic. Chelsea sort of dominated. Palace couldn't get the ball. The goals that Chelsea scored were excellent, particularly the Pulisic goal. But I have to say, and we love a bit of goalkeeper bashing on this show, and I'll hold my hands up and say, listen, how the hell do you make yourself smaller as a 6'4" goalkeeper? And as good as the strike was from Zaha, that was the only thing that got Palace back in the game, because Chelsea were in cruise control. But once again, when Lampard looks at the video, he's going to see a goalkeeper who I don't think he fancies. I think he'd like to sell, but probably can't because of the price Chelsea paid for him, who's potentially cost him some points again, because, you know, that was there to be saved. And for some reason, he was able to make himself smaller. And in the end, Palace got on the front foot in the second half, and sort of Chelsea were hanging on in the end. Lampard said it himself. Wasn't a great performance, but they got the 3 points.
With the opening Palace goal, it's straight in the middle of the goal, Frank. Goalkeeper's got to save it.
Yeah, that's the main problem we see with Kepa, who's capable of a fantastic save, and suddenly you wonder, you know, why you don't get the ball. You know, what happened to you? What happened to your skill? And it's like somehow he loses the vision of the ball and doesn't get the ball. As Craig said, that it's and it's not understandable, you know, what he just did on that goal.
Don?
No, I said it in commentary, and Craig's right. Chelsea were cruising at 2-0, and then when you expect Kepa to make a save, I mean, what's bizarre about it is in commentary, when Zaha took the strike on the first angle, I thought I flew into the stanchion, into sort of one of the top corners. And then you see it. I mean, Kepa's 6'4". If he puts his hands up in the air, he turns himself into 7 foot. He can jump 9 foot. So how on earth did he get smaller? And it went underneath his own crossbar. So I can't remember too many times this season that Kepa's either pulled off a save, which has given Chelsea a point, or pulled off an amazing save, which has given them all three. And I bet he's worrying, Frank, because he doesn't fill the goal neither, Dan. When he stands there in front of goal, when crosses are coming in, when free kicks and corners come in the box, he looks quite thin. He looks like a David De Gea when he first came to the Premier League, and he then beefed up and got himself a bit stronger. But Kepa at the moment, he has probably given Chelsea fans a little bit of anxiety, and probably Jody Morris and Frank as well. And they might be thinking, will they go in the transfer market and sign a goalkeeper in the summer?
It reminded me, Dan, of a goal that my old mate Kevin Hitchcock at Chelsea once let in against Wimbledon from about 30 yards. And it went in the middle of the goal, but quite low, but it did swerve. Now, Ruud Gullit couldn't get his head around it. So Sunday or Monday morning, we put the video on in front of all the lads, and he kept rewinding it at that moment, saying, this is incredible. How does this happen? Rewind it. And in the end, I thought Hitchy was going to knock him out, because he was embarrassed. But, you know, that's one of those moments where Lampard will look at it and think, you know, what if that was the last game? You know, what if we needed that point to get in the Champions League? That's the difference between, you know, being under pressure for your job or not. And as Don and the lads said, it's happening too often. And, you know, the likelihood of him getting him out and getting the money back is slim. So then he's got some decisions to make. He's got a huge FA Cup game coming up. As well, I think it's against Manchester United, the semi-final. Already some people are saying, well, did he put Willie Caballero in? So we're having these discussions again.
Not only, though, Kepa, that defence looks vulnerable. Don, give us your boring stat.
My boring stat is, I mean, Crystal Palace, Brighton and Newcastle have all scored more than Chelsea. I mean, what I would say is I thought Chelsea
conceded.
Were...
You can't even tell the stat properly, Don.
I'm not a stat man, Dan. Stats, I don't do stats.
You ruined it.
He was practising it before he came on. He was going, Newcastle, Brighton. Newcastle, Brighton.
Oh, dear. Don, by the way, did you commentate this game? I don't know if you mentioned it.
I did, Dan. What I would say in commentary, as Chelsea were absolutely brilliant going forward. I thought Reece James at right back had a great game. Christian Pulisic is just getting more confident. Willian, anyone would think that Willian's playing for a contract because he's been on fire lately. And I thought it took till Jorginho actually come off the bench, because the worry was Chelsea weren't really controlling the midfield. And they were giving a few loose balls away, and they were giving up a little bit of territory. And then when Jorginho came on, he just settled everyone down. He played the game at his own pace. He didn't really give the ball away. But it was a brilliant end to the game, because Palace were pushing to try and get a 3-3.
What do you do with Willian, Craig? Like, obviously, his contract ends at the end of the season, but he's been starting, 2 assists today. He seems to have an impact in every match.
Well, Chelsea had a policy, and I don't think they still have it, but anybody over 30 got 1 year. Now, they've sort of scrapped that and said, well, we'll give you two. The player himself wants three. Now, that's a stretch. I think it's taken him to 34. However, when you look at what he's doing, when you look at his fitness record, off the top of my head, is pretty good in terms of when he's available. They're clearly not going to get a sell on in 3 years' time. So you're going to get 3 good years, or at least a couple of good years, and then maybe in and around the squad in the third year. I think Chelsea, I think they probably should buckle. But it's a game of bluff now, and their concern might be is if we loosen the strings on this one with Willian, what do we say for the next 31-year-old who wants a 3-year deal? So it is a difficult scenario, particularly when the player is playing as well as he is. So if it was me, I'd give him a 3-year, but I really don't know what Chelsea are going to do.
In the lead-up to the opening goal, which he provided the assist for, of course, we saw Cahill pull up with an injury. Willian played on. The right thing to do, Frank?
No, I think if Willian didn't see the action, I think at least Giroud saw it and saw Cahill falling on the on the pitch, and he should have stopped the action. It reminds me of a fantastic, let's say, move from Paolo Di Canio at the time that there was a game Everton against West Ham, I think it was. It was 1-1. And suddenly Gerrard, the goalkeeper, went out and got injured. The West Ham player crossed the ball, and Di Canio caught the ball with his hand and stopped the action. I had a standing ovation, and I think he was named the most fair play players, you know, of the year. That was a fantastic action because he stopped, and he could have scored. I think Giroud should have stopped and the action and to see if Cahill was capable of going back to the game. But a goal, it's important. I know Chelsea is looking for a spot in the Champions League, but I think it has to be fair. And when you see a player getting injured like that in a crucial part of the field, you should be able to stop it and to show a little bit of
Don't.
Fair play. That's my point of view.
Get that man a drink.
I can understand that people don't agree with that.
Get that man, Frank. Crack open a Beaujolais. Crack open a Chateauneuf du Pape and drink it out of straw. Do it. I mean, come on.
I wouldn't
stop. The sentimental claptrap
no
here.
I'm not being sentimental. I'm being fair play. Football is a game.
Listen, there is lots of money.
So you don't agree. You didn't like what Di Canio did. You didn't like what Di Canio did.
Well, listen.
At the time.
Let me tell you one thing. It was a goalkeeper that was injured. That's slightly different. What I'll tell you about what would happen here is players will just start falling to the ground, right? And people will just pull up and say, oh, but sorry, I had to stop because he was injured. If it's not a serious head injury or a particularly serious injury, which is not a muscle injury, is an occupational hazard, you can't stop because we'll have players falling all over the place, dropping like flies, and then people will be saying, well, he should have stopped. At the end of the day, right, Gary Cahill was backed up, had to put a sprint on, the hamstring went. If I'm running through the middle of the park and somebody's hamstring goes when they're chasing me, which is bloody unlikely, by the way, as you two know, then I'm not gonna stop. I'm not gonna stop. So no, I'm sorry, mate. Unless it's a head knock, we're just ploughing on.
Don?
I agree with Craig. I mean, there's no way in a million years when you're chasing the top four spot or you're an elite athlete, you are not stopping for someone tearing a hamstring. Not in a million years. I wouldn't even be bothered with a fair play award. I'd want to try and win the league or finish top four or win a cup final or whatever. I'm with Craig. If Frank goes down, me and Craig are just going straight past him.
just a word on...
And by the way, I love you guys. I'm trampling over the top of him when I go past him as well, just for good measure.
Just a word on the goal from Pulisic. Obviously, looked great, Craig, since he's come back. His weaker left foot, not much of a backlit. Great goal.
Yeah. Don't mention shy, I'm going. Right, I'll tell you now. I'm dropping the camera, swiping up this link.
He's not shy. He's not shy anymore.
Listen, let's be quite honest about it. And we always try and be honest here. So if he's not played well or a player's not played well, we'll say it. Doesn't matter about nationality. Forget about that, right? Leave that to others. Leave that, you know, cheerleading to others. Christian Pulisic at the moment, right, is one of the first names on the team sheet for Chelsea, right? That's fantastic for him, for his confidence. And Lampard said it himself. I'll refrain from calling him Frank, Dan. I'll leave that to Don.
Yep.
Lampard said it himself. It's not just about his play and his change of pace, but it's the end product. And the more he adds that kind of end product, it's just going to be impossible to leave him out of the team. And he's going to have to do that. And I've said it, because Chelsea have a squad and they have other players coming in who can play in the wide positions, like Ziyech, like Werner, like Hudson-Odoi. Mount can play that. So he's going to have to play well. But he's one of the first in the team sheet at the moment. And there's a lot to be said about that.
Boys, you know, when you realise how good of a goal it was, Joel Ward was defending against him and he faced him up 1v1 and Joel Ward was thinking, well, I can't let him cut inside on his right foot because he'll bend it in the bottom corner. So he then sort of offered him a little bit of room on the left-hand side and his touches were so quick and so sharp, Pulisic was gone past him in a flash.
Did Frank tell you that?
No, I commentate on the game.
Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC back tomorrow. Lots of Premier League games going on, including Sheffield United against Wolves, City against Newcastle, plus it's Brighton against Liverpool.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
MLS is back. Kicks off then on ESPN tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern. Orlando City taking on Inter Miami. Looking ahead to that game, Sebastian Salazar joined by Casey Keller, Hercules Gomez and Ali Moreno.
Thanks, Dan.
Alejandro, so much to look forward to in this match. What are you most curious about?
I'm curious to see what these teams look like, what this rivalry will be like, even though it's their first matchup and Inter Miami is a new team. It's a logical rivalry, but in order for this to be a truly successful rivalry, both of these teams have to be good. Not one, not the other, not one dominating the other. Both of them have to be good. And over the years, what we have seen is that in order for a rivalry to be successful, for Seattle, Portland to work, well, both of the teams have to threaten to be good and win something that matters. Well, Orlando's a long way from that. Inter Miami's a long way from that. This is the first step. Hopefully, we get a good game.
Herc, a second straight tournament. Inter Miami starts things off without a superstar. What do you think?
Yeah, it is what it is. It's very difficult to get a superstar during this pandemic right now with the transfer window not being able. I mean, they could have announced Neymar. He wouldn't have been able to play in this tournament anyways. It is what it is. I'm more interested in seeing Diego Alonso do what he does in these type of settings. How many times, whether it's Liga MX or any type of setting, we've seen him limp into playoffs and then win it all in this 7-8-game series where it's winner-take-all? How many times have we seen him in a CONCACAF Champions League setting play this tournament style that suits him, that suits his team, and win and be effective? Now you have two teams with zero wins amongst them in two games each. It is what it is in this tournament, but it's also a good way of them saying, I own Florida. Both teams are used to the conditions, so it shouldn't be an excuse no matter what time of the day they play. It should be attractive because I think in a way, they're sort of similar. In a way, they both want to prove something. In a way, they both want to dominate Florida. That's what I'm looking for.
Casey, we know American soccer loves to manufacture a good rivalry. What do you think? Orlando City, Inter Miami, will it ever be like Seattle, Portland?
Well, I mean, most rivalries come, I think it's twofold. Obviously, there's a geographical rivalry, and they have that in place. And then it comes down to history. And unfortunately, there is no history. So they're going to have to build their own. I think we saw in New York, we saw a very quick rivalry grow. I think we saw that in L.A. as well. So I don't think there's any reason why they can't. It'll make it that little bit more tricky because sometimes that rivalry is really grown through the fan bases. And with this game being played behind closed doors, neither fan base really has an opportunity to sink their teeth into it. So it's frustrating on that side. And then I'm just kind of looking forward, you know, from the rivalry set aside, I'm looking forward to just seeing, you know, what's the intensity level of this first match? You know, are the players ready? There's no fans to cheer them on if it goes good or bad. And just, you know, can they rise to the occasion and really put on a good performance?
All right, then, good stuff, guys. If you want more on the MLS is Back tournament, who's in, who's out, the trio is back for a very special edition of ESPN FC on ESPN+.
Thank you very much, Seb. Meanwhile, some big games in the championship today. Forest taking on Fulham. This strike from Harry Arter, the difference between the two sides. Fourth versus fifth in the table. The 3 points going to Fulham, and it means they are still in the hunt for automatic promotion place. They are fourth, still 4 points off West Brom. Brentford, meanwhile, coming from behind to beat Charlton Athletic by 2-1. They're in third. Leeds and West Brom still massive favourites to advance to the Premier League automatically. The boys are still with us. It's tight, Craig, but it looks like it will be Leeds and West Brom, you would suggest. Big favourites, and of course a big moment for Leeds, who've been fighting for this for a very long time.
Yeah, and a huge club, a great club, but no divine right to be in that division, a bit like Nottingham Forest, 20-odd years or 20 years out of the top division. Double European Cup winners, my old club Derby in the playoffs as well. Look, Brentford would be some story. You know, Brentford, little old Brentford, who have almost, they've never been in the top flight. The heady heights of the championship at the moment, and it's a real bun fight, that league. But you know, whoever comes up comes up. As you know, I'm not, it doesn't make a difference to me. But if the East Midlands sides were to come up somehow, add that into Leicester, then there's some really good derbies there.
You look at Leeds, Frank, of course, they were big time when you were playing in England, have fallen from grace dramatically, still though a massive following.
Oh yes, because the atmosphere that you could find when you were playing away from home and you were playing against Leeds, that was unbelievable. I mean, I got a red card, I think, against Leeds. I mean, they've always been difficult games to play against with fantastic players. So they had Viduka, QL at front, Hasselbaink, I think, at the time. That was quite crazy to play against them, and I remember them playing European Cups at the time. It's a fantastic club. If they can come up, it will be fantastic derbies around the north side. But I'm a romantic. I want to see Nottingham Forest coming back. And from my young age, seeing Trevor Francis with Nottingham Forest, I was kind of something. So I played against them in Cup, I think, once. We played with Pierce on the captain, he was. But I would love to see them back to the Premier League once.
Who do you want to see come up, Don?
I would love to see Leeds come up. I think I would be intrigued if Bielsa comes up in the Premier League with his spying tactics and the way he goes about things and how fit he has this Leeds side playing. Slaven Bilic, an old mate of mine, I'd like to see them up. But I agree with the boys. I think Brentford's a great story. They play great football. And Scotty Parker's Fulham, they've probably been the best footballing side in the division. But for brute force and the size of the clubs, I think everyone wants Leeds back.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. For more from Frank and Craig, be sure to check out Extra Time, which is available on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to the whole cast of characters that we've had on throughout the program. Be sure, though, to stay tuned, as promised, that extra time with Frank and Craig. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig Burley with us, as is Mr. Sportsmanship Man of the Year. Would have kicked the ball out when Gary Cahill pulled up with a hamstring injury. You would have done that in a World Cup final, Frank.
I don't know. Really, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe yes. I saw Di Canio doing it like 20 years ago.
Yeah, but that's a goalkeeper. That's a slightly different, isn't it?
No, it's still a player. I mean, it's my feeling at that time of the game when I was watching and I saw Willian and I said, why he doesn't stop? He should stop. Oh. After. Why Giroud doesn't stop? And I know it's very important. I know Chelsea needs the 3 points to go into the Champions League. But I don't know. I have a sense of fair play, justice.
World Cup final. And, no way you're doing that against Brazil.
Maybe not. I have to be frank. I have to be honest. Maybe not. But. Being in front of the TV, you say, you know, you should stop. That would be fantastic. That's it. It's just what I'm saying. No controversy.
Right then. Former Chelsea boys, Craig, why aren't Chelsea linked with someone like Koulibaly? They seem like they could be true title contenders with a proper central defender.
I think budgets would be one of them. Plus competition for his services from other clubs. So I think I think Lampard looks at what he's got, and he's got Rudiger, Christensen, Tomori, Zouma, and he can chop and change within that. And I might have missed somebody, I don't know. But that's what he's got at the moment, and he's unlikely to offload any of those. So I think he's looking elsewhere, to be honest.
Frank, if you were Koulibaly, you had the choice. Chelsea, Champions League football. Manchester United, maybe Champions League football. Manchester City, title contenders, but no Champions League football as it stands because they're banned from Europe. Which one would you go for?
That's a good question and a hard answer to give. I would go for the Champions League. So whether Manchester United or Chelsea, I know that Chelsea needs more a central defender than Manchester United, because Manchester United, they have Maguire and I forgot the other one, sorry. But I think what we saw today with Christensen on the first or second goal against Crystal Palace. Mm. I mean, that was so appalling, and so they desperately need a good international central defender, and Koulibaly will fit very well. But Champions League, if Manchester goes to Champions League, Manchester United seems to be very keen to get him, very keen to get also to be a better team and get back to their prime. So it's going to be a hard decision for him. Even if he goes to Manchester City and get the title next year with the Premier League, and then after go for a good fight in the Champions League with City, it's also a good choice. So up to him.
What would you choose, Craig?
I would go City if that was the choice, primarily because he fell short with Napoli in the period under Sarri of almost winning the Scudetto. And, you know, we know City are not guaranteed, but are going to be the main challengers to Liverpool. And who wouldn't want to play in that side with all those talented players? Because we know Real Madrid have been chasing to be the top of the tree domestically again after their Champions League success. So we know how important it is to be the top guns in your own league. And I think that would be enough, to be quite frank with you. So that's where I would go.
Frank, which team?
But you know, Dan, I'm sorry Dan, if I may, I think that will be the next fight between clubs to be successful in Champions League and in the Premier League. Who has the best defense? Now, before we were looking for the best midfield player, then the best strikers. Now, in the new era, I think the main concern will be the central defense. Liverpool is the best team in the world because he has maybe the best central defender in the world. But Manchester United has been struggling, Chelsea has been struggling, City has been struggling, mm-hmm. Barcelona has been struggling because of a lack of fantastic central defenders. So Real Madrid is doing great right now because Sergio Ramos is the king of that position, and Van Dijk is the king of that position as well. It's why they have results.
Don't tell Stevie. Oh, he was talking to me about the golf the other day again about it. Ramos, I'm not saying he's not a bad player. He can't not be a bad player. He said, I'm saying I'm trying to concentrate my golf here.
You never talk about football going around the golf course. What's he on about?
No, I might have been at his house on a barbecue the other night. I don't know.
I saw a picture. Whose birthday was that? I saw you and Stevie looking like you're having a lovely time.
Nobody's birthday. It was an early birthday for my wife. It was Stevie's wife getting my wife something.
Right.
We got stuck at the Nickel household because we couldn't get an Uber.
Right.
We couldn't get an Uber to come to where he lived on a Saturday evening. And so we had to bunk down at the Nickel Castle for the evening.
With the big dogs?
Big dogs were downstairs, I believe. And the cat was there at the time, but I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think it may... This is I'm quite sad, but I don't think it's around anymore.
Oh, no!
And no, Stevie hasn't ate it.
Daisy the cat was one of the most famous cats in quarantine.
I think, and I may be speaking out of turn, but I think they had to have her put down.
Oh, blooming heck, Craig.
Well, I'm just relaying what I was told.
Oh, I know. Oh.
And anyway, he phoned me the next day and he said...
time now.
He phoned me the next day and he said, bloody hell, you didn't leave many of my beers.
Right. Which team looks best suited for the next 5 years, Frank? Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United or Arsenal?
The best. Hard to say. I think City is still the best team of those old teams. Chelsea is getting good. Manchester United also is back. I think Bruno Fernandes made a huge change, you know, on that spirit of that team. I see Arsenal having lots of troubles still because I don't think many players will want to come there. But Chelsea, Manchester United will increase their performances. And City, if they get a right or two right central defenders, they can fight for the title next season, for sure.
If you're putting those other teams in with Man City at the moment, go and have a lie down.
Right.
I mean, seriously, I know they lost to Southampton the other day. I know they've had a bad season by their standards. But clearly they've switched off. It's a bit like Liverpool switching off, and there was some Muppets on Twitter saying, well, how can this be the great Liverpool team? Look, they've lost the last. They've won the league so easy. They've got the flip-flops on, the suntan lotion. Look at the City squad. Yes, it needs, as Frank said, a few little pieces of the jigsaw. But just because they're losing, say, David Silva, they've still got an unbelievable amount of talent there. And it only needs a couple of little pieces for them. And you ask Jurgen Klopp, and he won't say it publicly, who's going to be the best team to give Liverpool a push next year? And it's going to be City by a long shot.
Right, Frank, a little bit what we were talking about before. What requires more skill, being a world-class defender or a world-class midfielder?
I think you have more importance if you play in the midfield. The war has to be won in the midfield zone, and physically, tactically, and technically, you have to be perfect to match with the world class player they're going to play against, and make sure that you do show your skills. You always can find, you know, a solution being at the back, you know, just being strong. And I remember Basil Boli, I don't know if people remember him, playing for Marseille and Auxerre and playing in defense. Technically, it was really poor, but he was a monster, always good in the right position, but really a monster. So I can name Martin Keown as well from Arsenal and some others where they weren't very strong, but they were very intelligent in the game and they could cope with the situation. I think you can sort out some problem being at the back. It's more difficult when you are a midfield player.
How did you end up in midfield, Craig?
That's where I was put.
Right, from the very start, from when you were like four, there you are, you're a midfielder, and that's it?
I think so, but then I did play several different positions, you know, and even sweeper, as we mentioned, that was short-lived. But, you know, at the end of the day, that was what I grew up with. I learned that position at Chelsea. But I think to be a world-class defender is more difficult because I think now, particularly nowadays, we see most of the guys wanting to be the headline defenders, as in coming forward. But really, the guys of yesteryear who would knock the socks off most of the players of these days in terms of their defensive qualities, it was all about, and the word Frank mentioned, was intelligence. Some of the best defenders over the years have not been the biggest, they've not been the quickest, and they've not been the strongest, but they've read the game brilliantly. And that kind of breed is going out the game. In some sense, Virgil van Dijk is a little bit of that, or a lot of that, because he's got the brute strength, he's got the speed, but he also reads the game pretty well. But back in the day of the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, there was some really, really great defenders who never had all the attributes of the modern player, but were very clever.
How did you end up in defence, Frank?
In fact, I was playing for Meaux, which is nearby Paris, and I was amateur, and I was playing midfield on the right side, and my coach was seeing me lots of time during the training session playing at the back, and he felt that I was good anticipating, you know, actions from the strikers and the midfielders. And once we were very poor in defense, and he said, don't you want to try, you know, once? And I tried for like 3-4 months, and we came back to the second position where we were in the rank, where we were like mid-table, and we ended up being the best defense in the championship, and it was in a third division, let's say. And then I signed for Laval, and I only had like 6-7 months as a defender, but I always wanted to attack, so it was a good combination for me. It was a leadership position I enjoyed, but that's the only time that I played as a defender, because during my youth I was only a striker or a number 10.
I think that's it for today's show. Thank you very much to Craig and to Frank. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.